Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Today, Lisa Lynn is finally back with me. Hey, she hasn't been here since the inside job.
Many moons ago.
A season ago. We're going to be talking about the King George job, which aired on August 29th, 2010. In this episode, so many things happen. The IMDb summary is pieces of Sophie's past, complicated job in London, where the team tries to expose an unscrupulous antiques trafficker who's using children as slave labor. This is like a case within a case. It's a very Russian nesting doll situation here.
I just felt like this was Sophie having her like existential crisis part two.
So what would you count as her part un of her existential crisis?
Two life crew job and the fairy godparents job, you know, with the whole.
Okay. And then also like in this season though, what's the job with the Russians?
The Iceman job.
No, this season. Iceman was last season.
Was there one with the Russians this season?
There was one with the Russians. Hang on. The three-card Monty job. Where they're coercing innocent people into committing crimes or helping them commit crimes. And she's like, you know, we chose this life. Those people didn't choose the life of crime. And this is going to weigh heavily on
Russian souls forever.
And Nate's dad.
Tom Skerritt was so good in that episode.
That whole episode is just chef's kiss. Wonderful. So this episode was written by Christine Boylan, and it was directed by Millicent Shelton, who is the first female director of an episode of Leverage. And sadly, she's only one of two to direct in the entire series. There are three episodes that are directed by two women, which sucks. There should be more women directing the show. Like we've talked about before, the writing room is slightly better. And I counted. It's a third of the writers are women.
I love Amy Burke episodes.
All good. I love Christine Boylan episodes. Like she's really good on like having like the characters have these like big emotional moments. So she like Sophie has in this one.
I feel like it makes sense that Boylan wrote this episode because it has such a theatrical feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is vintage. That is just vintage Boylan. There's this theatrical like a little just a tad over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just her. So it makes sense that this was a Boylan episode.
I mean, they go to England for Pete's sake. It's wonderful. So we start up the episode in media res, right in the middle of the action. They're in the middle of a con. They're at Logan Airport in Boston.
I have never been through Logan, so I cannot attest to how accurate the Logan set is, quote unquote. You know,
I've been to Logan. It looks nothing like this, but I wasn't expecting it to actually look like Logan inside. They filmed this in a convention
somewhere. Probably some warehouse somewhere.
No, it was a convention hall.
Oh.
Yeah, and they were saying it was weird because I'm used. There were no nerds walking around in cosplay because I'm used to going to, you know, comic conventions. They are trying to intercept this guy named, I think it's Thomas Keller, who works for Damian Moreau, who has finally resurfaced in our storylines. It's John Douglas Keller. They were going to drop little bits about throughout the season, but there was like scheduling issues with the actors. So they were like, we'll just back end it. We just saw the very end. Backload it.
You were thinking Ratatouille, Thomas Keller. You were thinking the French Laundry Ratatouille. That's the name of the chef, isn't it, Thomas Keller?
I have no idea. I've only seen Ratatouille once and I didn't really pay attention. Okay. Thomas Keller has got to be something else too. But yeah, no. So John Douglas Keller is a smuggler who works for Damien Moreau. And he's played by James Frain, who has been in like everything, like True Blood.
He is one of those character actors who's like really great and kind of like a chameleon, can just kind of like slip in and out and be kind of anybody. Like, what's his name? The actor who played Ron Butterfield, the Judge Evil Ron Butterfield.
Yes, Evil Ron Butterfield. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, but I think he's usually like a villain.
There's just something about him that he probably just gets typecast in.
Yeah. I looked back through his
person in real life, but like when it comes to acting, maybe he just has that aura.
Yeah, he's kind of menacing. He's got the accents. I was looking back through his I was looking back through his IMDb and I was like, oh my God, that's what I know him from. But he's like been in everything. He was in The Tudors. He was on Fringe.
He was on
24.
He did an episode of The Closer. I think he was the bad guy in that episode too.
Yeah, he was on Burn Notice.
I remember him. I think he was even on Grey's Anatomy. I think he played a mentally ill patient in that episode. So
he was in Where the Heart Is. He played Forney Hull. I'm trying to remember who that is and Where the Heart Is. Is that the guy that
Hallmark series?
No, the Ashley Judd has a not. Who is it? Is it Ashley Judd who has it? Hold on, I'll go back to it. The girl has the baby in the Walmart. 2000. It's based on a book.
You lost me.
Yeah, Natalie Portman. She is a pregnant 17-year-old who rebuilds her life after being abandoned by her boyfriend at a Walmart in Sequoia, Oklahoma.
Okay. All right.
You know, wow.
Ah.
I think he was good. Let me see. Like, I think, yeah. Oh, he's the good guy that she marries at the end. Oh, spoiler.
So he's good.
He played a good guy once. I'll give him that. But he was in something else, and I was like, oh, that's where I know him from. He was on an episode of Tales from the Crypt. 24. Yeah, you're right. He was on an episode of Grey's Anatomy. Mm-hmm. Lie to Me. Law and Order, Special Victims Unit. Because you gotta do that. CSI. CSI Miami. He was in The Cape.
Oh, he played the bad guy. He's in Elementary. My sister loves that show.
Oh. He was on an episode of Sleepy Hollow. He was in Grimm.
Oh, he was in Hawaii 5-0. Huh.
He was on Agent Carter. He was in True Detective. Gotham, Orphan Black. Oh, that's what it is. He is in Star Trek Discovery. He plays Sarek, which I love Star Trek Discovery.
Is that a bad guy or a good guy?
That's a good guy. That's Spock's dad.
Okay.
It's a very good guy.
Okay.
I love Sarek. I love Star Trek Discovery. Okay, so they are hoping to intercept him at the airport, because he smuggles in goods.
We're doing some like exposition dumping here, explaining like they're here because he smuggles for Moreau and blah 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 blah. Now, Hardison is playing a customs agent, but he's calling the audible and doing the info dumping, which I'm kind of like, what? Like, he has no line. Like, no, he doesn't have a steady stream of people coming in. Like, I'm not fine.
He's, like, on his phone. I'm like, oh my God, I'd be so annoyed if I was some exhausted person who just come on an international flight.
Right.
I'd be so tired. And then, but I also buy it, like, he's bored and doesn't want to do work. Or, you know,
But that would not be
he's
allowed.
Like a slacking government employee.
But that would not be allowed. Like, if he's on a break, like, he would not be behind the booth. He would be in the break room. So if he's there, like you said, like, if passengers, travelers would riot. Like, why is that guy standing there? Why is he not, like, checking us in? Like,
so they would riot. Yeah. Look. No, I agree.
Like, so that's the first thing I bumped into. You know?
I think it's just one of those leverage things. You just gotta let it go.
And there were quite a number of callbacks in this an episode. I remember artists saying they were using some...
Yes. DuBenich's... Victor DuBenich. Victor DuBenich? No.
Duberman.
Yes. Because when they said Duberman, I thought DuBenich. And then I was like, but he doesn't have technology. Like, what? He wanted airplane plans.
Like, so they were using,
got it. Duscherman from the reunion job.
They were using, like Duberman's technology, you know, and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also get Elliot in a captain's uniform again, a flight captain, which is very nice. And then he almost immediately sees one of his weaknesses, which is a small child who needs his help.
There's just something about, like, big, gruff, like, hitter Elliot, and he just melts for this little girl. And you can just tell instantly, he just softens and posture relaxes, and he just, like, Jesus.
Control yourself.
But I am not wrong.
No, you're not. You're not. He even, like, immediately is just like, all right, you guys got this, because I'm obviously doing this now, helping this little girl. And so what they want to do is they're gonna do a switch with Keller's briefcase, and they get an eye on it and see what it is, and Parker's has a luggage cart, and she's gonna switch it out, but she has to, like, run and get a fresh one.
I think she had, like, a sample of various luggages, and then I think
she did. She's just like, all right, we can use any of these. What is it gonna be? Oh, it's a black briefcase with silver clasps.
I have one here that will work nicely with this model too.
Yeah, and she, like, knows exactly. She's like, oh no, I don't have one here, but I know where I can get one. And then she just, like, abandons this luggage cart. And Keller meets up with his, the reason they're trying to catch him, intercept him inside the airport is because once he gets outside, he'll have a lot of security.
And we do see his, one of the goons with him, his security with him. Like, I didn't.
Yeah, who from the back is totally Jason Statham's tinier brother.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I will give you that.
Yeah. But instead of Elliot taking care of them, he helps the little girl. And
it is so cute.
She's so precious with her little pigtails, and she doesn't know what to do. He takes her hand.
I mean, if you don't help that little girl, like, you have a black heart of ice, and you are dead inside, and you are a horrible human being.
Yeah, but he does only just walk her, like, 5 steps to a customs agent who was waiting there for her. But that's okay. And then Hardison stamps.
Like, where, you know, where's your people, sweetie? Why are you here alone? She's like, no, my aunt and uncle are right there, you know.
Yeah. But I love that she, like, picked the one guy around who, like, could speak Arabic to her. Because, of course, Elliot can speak Arabic.
I wonder, you know, I remember Gina, like, was talking about, and I think Jerry, to a certain extent, they, whenever they're on the grift and they take on these characters, they have a coach who helps them with the languages and the dialects and stuff like that. Like, I wonder if Christian had to, like, do a little work on the Arabic, or if he just kind of, like, just muddled through it. You know what I mean?
No, I'm sure he had help.
Yeah.
I'm sure he had help. I think he cares enough about the craft to make sure it comes out good. So Elliot speaks Arabic and Hardison speaks Boston and stamps his frames.
Did Boss Albus attempting a Boston accent?
Oh, what? Yeah. And he's like chomping the gum. It's light. Like, he's not trying to be obnoxious about it, but he's got definitely a little Boston thing on it. So he does the, hey, you know, what are your reasons for coming to the country? Oh, business meeting. I'm just going to be in and out. It's not enough time to see the city. And behind Hardison, you can see the little girls going through customs and they're like going through her bag. And then we see like alarms go off because they've found this like antique reliquary thing, like statue in her bag.
The alarms are off and everyone's on like DEFCON 1 right now. Like it was just,
yeah. And she has no idea what's going on. She's on the other side of the ropes from her family.
She's so scared. She's
and
like, what's happening? Can I go? I want to go home. And I'm like, oh, honey.
Yeah. And Keller's just like, could you stamp my passport? I got to go. And he's like, thank you. Bye.
Ugh.
And then they like escort her back into the airport.
Hardison is like just so flustered and just kind of like, and he just got to, go. But like, and he's just like, just turned around and is combobulated. Like, this is not going to plan.
Yeah. And the little girl's lawyer is trying to get to her. He's like, I have her refugee status paperwork right here. Like, I need to get to her. And Keller and his henchmen are discussing, oh, well, she got caught, but like the other 10 that we tried to get through got through fine. So she's an acceptable loss. Like, let's go.
Like, not an evil speech of evil, but enough to establish them as evil.
Yeah. In like two sentences, you're like, oh, this guy, we're going to take him down. Yeah, and like Sophie's ready to throw down now. She's like, I'm gonna go in off the cuff and I'm gonna get this girl out. She, you know, doesn't have anything set up, but she's like, I'm gonna do it, let's go. And Nate's like, no, you know, we have to go, we have to do this by the book. Well, not by the book, we're criminals. But
when Nathan Ford is the voice of reason, do you know how far off Nathan Ford is the voice of reason?
Yeah, no, it's a little extreme if that's the case, especially if there's a kid involved. So Nate and Sophie are chatting with Ibrahim, who is the lawyer that we saw earlier. Mm-hmm. And they find out from him that, you know, he's been doing all he can, but these children who are like sent over on their own are often like held at gunpoint and like threatened if they don't carry or smuggle these items in their bags. Then they'll kill them.
Or half the time, they probably don't even know what's in it anyway.
Yeah, I feel like that little girl did not know what was in her bag because she seemed not scared at all.
Yeah.
So, but there's nothing he can do. He's, you know, there's so many cases like this and he's following all the proper channels and everything. And Sophie is just disgusted and she's like obviously really distressed by all of this.
Like, this is why I'm saying, like, she is going through another, like, existential crisis in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah. I love this scene. It's just beautifully shot. Like, they come in from above, and there's, like, this starburst light fixture. But behind Ibrahim, there's like, a couple who's asleep on this couch behind him, which is very airport terminal.
Oh, I mean, like, I don't want to jinx myself, but I've never really had that bad, like, juju where I've been stranded at an airport. So, you know, knock on wood that never happens. I'm just stranded there, like, sleeping at the airport.
I've never been stranded, but I have had to sleep in an airport just because my layover was, like, 14 hours.
Ooh, that's
I'm just, like, yawning thinking about it. But there were no couches. All of the benches had little armrests. You could not lay down. It was horrible. Okay, so we're back at Leverage headquarters to kind of run down what we need to do. And I love this. They're talking about like why they've started following Keller. It's because he's doing the work that Moreau used to do when he started out as a criminal. So basically what they're doing is archaeology of crime. Yeah. So the further back that you go, the more mess ups that they made before he got to be this master criminal, and the more of their real life is there. So they're hoping to like get closer to Moreau this way.
They're trying to get a read on him based on what they can find, what they can profile of him from the crime, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Keller took over when Moreau kind of stepped up his operation. Mm-hmm. And he's in town to smuggle these items, right? But then he's like heading straight back out because he's going to an auction at Claridge's in London. And so they're like, well,
Sophie, I guess,
yes, you know, what's he going to buy? What's he want in London at this, at this auction? Is it something huge that Moreau wants? So he's, you know, going there on his behalf or what?
Is it something totally unrelated? We do not know.
Yeah, but Sophie's still, like, feeling really upset about this whole situation of this young girl, you know, being used to smuggle items that she would have stolen. Mm-hmm. And she kind of storms off downstairs, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Am I not allowed to brood down here? It's so great. She's sitting at the bar. But then, you know, Nate comes down. We're all formal now. Nate comes down and has a drink with her and tries to talk her kind of off this ledge. Like, you know, you never did this. You stole from rich men who wouldn't notice it, or like it didn't bother them. But how did they get it to begin with?
That's kind of like what she gets back. Then we could kind of get to the crux of what's sticking in her craw. Like, I don't know that what the collateral damage was. I don't know that maybe someone did get hurt that I didn't know about. And that's kind of like what's eating at her.
Yeah.
Like, because to her, it's just, I am just getting rid of these pretty paintings and I am just all these things and these rich people. But it occurred to her, the outward ripples of it, I guess, of what maybe had been done to acquire those things and who may have gotten hurt in the process. And the fact that it's this little girl is just, she can't handle it.
So it's that old saying, there's no ethical con under capitalism. But Nate kind of pulls her out of that and is like, hey, let's go steal an auction. Let's go. And she's like, all right, I'm in.
It's kind of like, he was kind of like trying to, it was almost like she was trying to soothe like a 3-year-old who like needs a nap or like is sad that they didn't get a cookie. Do you want to go to London?
Do you want to go on our private jet? Because they show a little jet. I'm like, they totally took a private jet to London.
Like, do you want to go to London and do something? Will that make you feel better?
Yeah.
And then Sophie's like, yes, please.
Ooh, it's like, you know, getting ice cream on the way home because you were good at the doctor. Exactly. So they show like the outside of Claridge's auction house, which is actually the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, where I've been. The inside is not the Victoria and Albert. It is an old church, I believe, in Portland.
I love that they got cat sort of campy, and then like on the flight like montage, they just play a little bit of Rue Britannia.
You have to. If your cast is going to England or pretending to go to England, you have to play that song. And I love Sophie's look here. So this black dress, these big, she wears so many pearls in this episode. These big pearls, and her hair is up in like a chignon.
Very aggressive pearls, Steve. Those are very big, aggressive pearls.
Yeah, those pearls tell you a thing or two.
Like Barbara Bush pearls, like on steroids. Those were some huge suckers.
Yeah. And to like further drive home the fact that, yes, we are in England. There is a painting of Queen Victoria. And Hardison has broken in. Oh my God. He is. So he's wearing like a worker's jumpsuit, and he's broken into the offices, like where the files are at Claridge's. And it says, his little outfit says Wade, which is, I believe, the name that was on the outfit that, no, it couldn't be, Elliot was wearing in the last episode, the Rashomon job, when he circumvents the thing being from being shipped to Sophie. But that was from before they all met, so it's probably not the same one. But I bet
I still need to listen to
Hardison use that. So Hardison's trying to, you know, hack into the files, but they're antiques. The operating system is an antique, just like the rest of the stuff being auctioned, and he is not psyched. And Sophie's like, oh yeah, like that's just gonna be bare bones. Their stuff is gonna be on paper. And he looks at all these filing cabinets and he's like, those aren't just decoration.
Like, my love, it's gonna be a generational thing too. My mom likes having like hard copies of stuff. Like, she's kind of like, she still side eyes like the cloud and stuff like that. Like, she just feels better having a hard copy of stuff.
Yeah. So Keller walks in and he's wearing a cravat because he's very fancy. And Parker, of course, picks his pocket so she can kind of see what's going on. He has a ticket for the auction. That means that he is going to bid on something. So Sophie looks up what he wants to bid on, and she's not impressed by it. He just wants to bid on a signet ring. And so she's like, it's not huge. Like, it's not something Damien Moreau wants. This is something he personally wants.
I probably feel like this is probably something Apollo Robbins thought them. Like Sophie is reading this as much as any like psychiatrist or psychologist, like reading a situation or dealing with like a patient on the cath. Like, she is like reading him. Like,
and, yeah,
like a good con will like read their mark. Like, they know their psychological what their way in is, and like that. I felt like that was like really impressive. So it's like she automatically zeroes in on that. So it's like, this isn't worth anything. So it means something to you.
Yes, I think that's brilliant. I love it so much. And then we just get that little thing right now, like just like, this isn't expensive, so it must mean something.
Like, for you to like go crazy and overbid like this. So, and then she's like, this is bugging me. Like, what is going on with, like, what is making him tick? Like, why is this thing, like, making him tick? Like, what is it? And it's kind of like that itch that won't go away until she figures it out. Like
yeah.
Like, when you're trying to remember the name of that actor and that thing, and it bugs you until you figure it out.
Exactly. So Nate sends, Hardison's still looking up, like, his past records of like what he's bought before, and Nate sends Parker to break into their vault to see what else they've got waiting to be auctioned off in later auctions. And this is like such a good scene because it's just Parker alone with a safe, like just telling us it's all exposition, just her telling us how she's gonna break into the safe, like everything we need to know about it. But she's lit with a golden light. She is obviously just really into this. And I'm just like, this is her dirty talk. It's so good.
Like, I'm gonna put it out there. That was some dirty talk. She was like,
yes.
I'm like this close to like having sex with that safe or something. Like, it was dirty talking.
She is
very
aroused by the history of the safe.
It was very uncomfortable and very sexual.
I loved it. I thought it was, I think it's sensual. I don't think it's sexual. It was very sensual.
There is a difference.
She's wearing this like lacy, like top that's like buttoned up. It's like very like Victorian almost. And she's like caressing the safe and talking about when it was built, like what it uses, how it can't have heat sensors because of the English damp, how it must have like withstood the crime raids.
Is this another Glenn Reader, quote unquote?
Glenn? No.
Okay, not a Glenn Reader.
No. Okay. No. But yeah, and then she's like, oh, you never had a chance, and just busts right in. And then she's so cute. When she's looking through all of the stuff in there, she's like, oh, you know, I've got some Russian icons, are pretty nice. I've got some other things. And she's like, oh, how are you? Like, it's this thing that she's like, oh, last time I saw you, you were in the Louvre Well, no, you were in the back of my car. But before that, you were in the Louvre.
It was just such a Parker moment.
It's so good.
It was such a Parker moment. But then, basically, Nate had to be like, Parker, focus.
Yeah. She's like, oh, just, I'm reminiscing. It's fine. And she, you know, she finds some goblets. She finds the Russian icons. And then she finds a statue, Egyptian. And he's like, okay, wait, is it a dog head, a bird head, or a something else head?
Dog or bird or something, yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, it's a bird. And he's like, oh, it's Ra.
And
Sophie's still like, what are you doing with this ring? I don't get it.
And then Parker was like, and then think the statue is smirking at me.
Yeah. And then she's like, smirks back at it a little. So Hardison finally finds Keller's file, and all the stuff that he's auctioning off are obviously like these stolen antiquities from the Middle East and different digs. But his file that he has bought are very different. He's bought several manor houses in Scotland and you know, things like that. And he tries to pronounce the names. He's like, oh, there are too many G's.
And N's. And then in that moment when they spin back to Gina, like, you can tell Sophie's like, the wheel in Sophie's head are spinning. She's starting to put it together. Like, so
yeah,
this stuff in Scotland, the Prince Regent's ring, it's starting,
yeah,
to figuring it
She's out. Like, okay, it's percolating. She, Nate and Parker do the handoff of the statue, and she tells him happy hunting. And so he goes to kind of intercept Keller coming out of the men's room, and he's going to give him back his bidding number that Parker had stolen. And he's also going to be like, oh, hey, so I heard you're really good at smuggling things, and I need to smuggle this into America for a buyer.
Okay, I'm just going to put that out there. Not the best way to approach someone in this type of work if you're really wanting to do business. Like, should there be a more subtle approach?
I don't think that Nate was trying to be subtle. I think that's part of the con.
Okay, but if you were legitimately trying to do business, like, there would be a more subtle approach, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a criminal. I don't know how I would do it.
But
I feel like having stolen merchandise in an auction house, probably not the best thing. Or maybe it's, you know, a case of like, there's so many other things they're not going to notice.
Who knows?
I don't know. But Keller is not easily fooled by this not very well done con. And he grabs, you know, he's looking at the statue and he smells it.
And in a way, he's kind of like stringing Nate along. Oh, you found, oh, where do you work for? Oh, is this where you found it? Oh, Egyptian. Oh, and then like, and apparently you can tell like he's not buying it because he's like, I feel like he was kind of stringing Nate along. Like,
yeah.
You can tell like, yeah, but again, like you said, which is part of the con, I imagine Nate wanted to be found out. He may not have wanted to be beaten up, but he wanted to be found out.
Right. Yeah, so Keller's like, uh-huh, yeah, sure, okay, yeah, I'm listening. And then he inspects the thing, he looks at the base, and he smells it, and then he, like, lets his goon beat Nate up. I love when he smells it, like, he's like... Like, you're pulling it up and down. It's hilarious. And when he smells it, Sophie knows. Like, that, like, gives her another piece to her puzzle. She's like, he smelled it. Like, he understands, you know, this thing about it, which makes sense. Like, he's worked on these archaeological digs and stuff. But it's almost like it's the final thing she needs to hear before she figures it out. And Elliot hears Nate get punched in the stomach, and he's like, I'm coming.
I'm on my way.
But they're like, nope. And Sophie's like, I got this. I know his heart's desire. I'm going to steal his soul, as Parker said in the underground job.
It's game on now. It's game on.
Right? Totally off topic. In every scene so far that we've seen of Elliot, Christian Kane has had a hat on that's like low on his head. So he had the captain's hat. He had a baseball cap inside back in Portland or in Boston. You know,
right, like he is posted
on now he is a beanie, and usually when he's wearing a hat like that, it means he's injured his head somehow. But they didn't say anything about it in the commentary.
He got injured and like gave John like fits because he went and did the damn stunts himself again.
Yeah, but usually they mention that like in the
commentary. Something, right?
Yeah, like, you know, or they'll like work it into the storyline, like he got beat up at a gay bar or something. But yeah, they don't mention it at all, and then later he's not wearing it, so I'm like, why did you have so many hats on?
Elliot just felt like wearing headgear. That
his hair was just really frizzy. Okay, so Sophie shows up, and sometime from realizing what this man's heart's desire is to showing up, she's found this like fancy tweed blazer jacket thing. And she like walks in and is like a completely different person, like just subtly.
The timbre of her voice, like the accent, like her posture.
Yes. She's like looking down her nose, and yeah, her voice is just that smidgen more posh and cold, and you know, excuse me, you're beating up my employee.
Right.
And
it's just all in like the posture and this, yeah, it's like she has a very regal bearing right now.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I'm the Charlotte, I can't think of who she was.
Charlotte Prentice, 18th Duchess of Hanover.
Thank you. And he's like, oh, and he bows and he calls her.
This is a clue to the audience. Like, he's like, he just, your grace, the bow, like, and she has gloves on, the gloved hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he immediately, like, what does he call her? Your grace instead of my lady, which is the more common way of talking about it.
Unless you read Regency romances where everybody's your gracing all over the place. But that's
not obviously Keller is reading Regency romances
naturally.
So she, you know, says, I'm sorry, my employee's kind of an idiot, but we do need someone to help us smuggle this stuff, and we heard you were really good.
He's immediately deferential.
Yeah, but he turns her down. He says, I'm sorry, I have another employer. Like, I don't do side jobs.
My apologies, and, Your Grace. The answer is still no.
Yes. You know, she offers him, like, keeps trying to offer him more money, and he doesn't want it. And then they start to leave, and she's like, well, I could get you a knighthood. Something that's, like, worth more than money. And he's like, no offense, but the queen gives out 2,600 of those a year, so... I could get one if I wanted.
Elton John has a knighthood. Excuse me.
Elton John slept with a Soviet agent. Elton John deserves a knighthood.
Wait. He did what, Steve?
On a rooftop in Russia. It just came out recently. He knew that the KGB, I think, had someone undercover in his like kind of his retinue. And so he like seduced the guy because they were like following him and like tracking his movements. I think when he was on tour.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me the KGB planted someone in his entourage? Is that what you're?
Yes. Talking? Hang on, I'm looking it up. Elton John. Maybe I hope this wasn't a fever dream. Okay. Yes. No. Elton John had sex with a KGB agent on a Russian rooftop.
And you know, this fits perfectly because I have been on like spy thing lately because I'm watching The Spy on Netflix right now with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Okay.
which is kind of based on the real life story of Eli Cohen, who was this Mossad spy back in like the early late 50s, early 60s during the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. And I'm gonna give props to Sacha Baron Cohen right now, because we know his work and his reputation. The man has serious dramatic chops, Steve.
Yeah, it's not hard to be funny. I mean, it's not easy to be funny.
No.
So I feel like comedians are like so much more versatile sometimes than dramatic actors.
Right. So, I mean, if you ever want to watch it, like, I would recommend it. It was fascinating. Like, Sacha Baron, like, I thought it was great. So.
Okay, but more importantly, Elton John slept with a KGB agent, and I need to tell you about it.
Yes!
So, the 66-year-old singer admits he got intimate with this KGB agent who worked for the Russian security agency in a bid to compromise him, because he claims the country's secret police planted the guy and his entourage to ensure his every move was watched while he was in the Soviet Union, or so he told The Observer. I went to Russia in 1979, and I knew we were being watched all the time, he said in an interview. I had an interpreter that they'd clearly set up. I ended up having sex with him on the hotel roof.
Holy crap!
I love it!
I mean, this is like taking, you know, lie back and think of the empire to a whole nother level.
Well, no, it's like, it's a big fuck you to a country who, like, is horrible to their homosexual population.
Well, this is true, too. This is true.
Yeah.
This is true too.
So yeah, but it says he's heading to Russia in December to lend his support to the nation's homosexual citizens protesting against the country's anti-gay laws, but admits he will have to be careful what he says during his time there, saying, I'm supposed to be going to Moscow in December. I've got to go, and I've got to think about what I'm going to say very carefully. There's two avenues of thought. Do you stop everyone going, ban all the artists coming in from Russia? But then you're really leaving the men and women who are gay and suffering and under the anti-gay laws in an isolated situation. As a gay man, I can't leave those people on their own without going over there and supporting them. I don't know what's going to happen, but I've got to go.
Respect, Sir Elton John.
Yes. Screw that KGB agent.
I remember when the Olympics were associated, I remember that was like a thing. So a number of like LGBT athletes were like, are we even going? Like, can I represent my country? Like, am I going to be safe there? Like, what, you know? I think it was, you know, so, I mean, even today, they've got, like, a long way to go for LGBT rights.
They haven't gone anywhere. They have all the way to go. Yeah. So, okay. So, back to how dare you slur Elton John. I have no opinions on Elton John.
Was dissing Elton John. I am not dissing Elton John. He was dissing Elton John by saying anybody could get a knighthood.
But he didn't specifically say Elton John. You said Elton John.
Okay. Fine.
How dare.
They gave Dame Judi Dench a knighthood too. Whatever. Okay?
Again, are you trying to say bad things about Judi Dench?
No!
She is a Quaker. You leave her alone. She is an angel. I don't know if I can continue this podcast with this.
I'm horrible. I'm not coming for Judi Dench. I am not coming for her.
I don't know, listeners. If you think Lisa's coming for Judi Dench, you let me know.
Judi Dench's goals for me, because she's vertically challenged like me, but she, like Dame Maggie, had that like icy death glare that can freeze like and kill like a, you know, it's put fear of God in a man's soul, and I want that weapon in my arsenal.
I know, it's really hot. It's amazing. Yeah. We should all be so lucky. Okay, so back to the show. Yeah. So he doesn't care about a knighthood because anybody can have a knighthood. Yes. And she, it's great. She like waits for him to like be, she doesn't even turn to him. She just has her head tilted, like turned to him. Her body is still facing away from him. And she lets him walk almost all the way down the hallway. And then she's like, or I could get you one of the lost baronies. And she just kind of like waits. She just waits. She's got black leather gloves on. It's crazy. And Nate's like, it's not going to work. She's like, oh, hang on. And he comes right back in. He's like, you're going to, what? You could get me a lost barony? But now we have everybody leaving Claridge's. And everyone's like in some layers, but Hardison's got the guns out. Because Christine Boylan knows what the people want. The people want Parker sweet talk in a safe, and they want Elliot in a captain's uniform, and they want Hardison in a wife beater.
Wait, was it her or was it Amy Berg who wrote the bottle job where we got shirtless Hardison as well?
No, that was also Christine Boylan, I believe. Let me double check really quick.
I mean, they know what we need. They know what we want.
They do. They're here for us. They could come through. My internet's being weird. But I believe it is Christine Boylan.
So, yeah, we're going to... Let's go steal the royal title. So we go back to the hotel room, which is, since they can't go back to Leverage HQ, right. They're here in the hotel room, and Nate is pouring himself a drink.
A posh hotel room. Very well, posh.
Yeah. nothing too good for a duchess. And he says, he's kind of not scolding her, but he's kind of like, Sophie, a royal cover story is really easy to check, and it's really hard to fake.
Basically, he's like, if you just drop this, slow your role.
If you just dropped this like Duchess persona, like that's so dangerous because he can just easily run a Google, like Google you, and no, there's no, you know, Duchess of that name.
Like we talked about on Monday, there is no Hardison doing backup on the search algorithms for you. And like backstopping you.
Exactly. She just did it off the cuff. But then she lets us know it's not really off the cuff. She says she spent 7 years establishing this persona, and it's rock solid.
Okay, Sophie.
And I'm like, I'll trust you. And then, you know, like you said last time, she kind of starts to take point on the con at this juncture.
Yes.
And
it's still with the very aggressive pearls. I'm not over the aggressive pearls. Very aggressive.
No, and I don't think we should get over them because that's just way too much.
Yeah.
So I think it's Parker who asks, like, how did you know that he wanted a title? How did you know he wanted to be, you know, part of a peer of the realm? And she says that she figured it out because he's been buying up all these smaller estates, which is one way to earn a minor barony. And plus he's a royal fetishist, which we went into on our first recording.
And she explained she figured it out because that's why he went overboard on that little signet ring, which wasn't worth anything. So like she kept saying, it's not worth anything, so it means something. So now we know what it's kind of like meaning for him.
And I think we should state that it doesn't not mean any, not, it's not not worth anything. It is the signet ring of
relatively,
a king. It is very
relatively
valuable. And she says, like, for a guy who traffics in priceless antiquities, this is relatively, you're right, relatively,
right.
Useful,
yes.
Like, worth it.
Yes.
And so then they go on to talk about the lost baronies. So currently there are 86 unclaimed titles, and the Earl Marshal in the Leverage universe, anyways, controls the succession of titles in the peerage.
And I think that's how it actually works in real life, too, because we looked it up, and there is an actual Earl Marshal, the Duke of Norfolk.
There's an Earl Marshal, but he's not in charge of the succession. He helps with the research.
The gatekeeping, right. We say he's like the gatekeeper.
He's like the gatekeeper.
He's like looking at people's claim that I am the next Earl of Montague, or whatever.
Yeah, you can't just be like, oh, look, here's a family photo. Like, you need family trees, you need proof, you need
birth certificates, like baptism records, like church records, all that good stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love Parker. Parker asks, does it come with a castle? Like, when you get a barony. And Sophie says, sometimes, yeah.
But as every historical romance reader knows, a baron is kind of pretty low on the peerage title totem pole. You know, it's not that terribly impressive. There are viscounts, marquises, earls, and dukes. Like, it's not, a title is impressive, but you're not a duke. And, you know.
But it's quite a jump up from commoner.
Correct. Correct.
And that's, you know, that's where he's at right now. So all he wants to be is, like, invited to the party. And then maybe after that, then he'll, like, work his way. I don't know how he would work his way in. So Hardigan points out that Keller has applied for an audience with the Earl Marshal, like, a bunch of times, and he's been denied an audience. So, you know, Nate's like, oh, that was a good guess. And Sophie says, is it really a guess when it's that good? No.
Right. And because Sophie sold it, like, listen, I can get you a meeting with him. I can write you a letter. I happen to be closely related to, like, the 10 people in the world who can get you in the door. So, like, she is selling, like, this whole thing. Like.
Yeah.
Presumably, even if we, like, she has all these personas, like, presumably, like, she is British of some sort, of some fact, of some extraction. So she is steeped in the culture. She knows what the class system is like in Britain. She knows how that kind of thing works. So she's comfortable navigating it.
Especially if she spent 7 years creating this persona of a duchess.
Yes, Charlotte Preface.
All right, so Nate is ready to kind of explain the con they're going to be using. The con is called the Mummy's Tiara, which, of course, Hardison is like, that can't be real. You stop making up these cons. Like, that's not a real name. And Parker, we talked earlier about how there's a lot of callbacks in this episode. This is another one. She says, am I going to have to steal a corpse again? Like, this is a callback to the ice job.
Which episode is that?
I forgot about that until they mentioned it. The ice job is when they run a fake insurance scam.
The snow job. Right.
Thank you.
I remember he was like in the MRI or something, and then like they had to pretend that this guy has like a tumor or something, and there's a guy to some insurance thing. Right. Yes. Okay, yes, I remember now.
Sorry, the snow job, not the. I was writing the ice job, and I thought that doesn't sound right, because there's the ice man job. That's totally different. So this con, the Mummy's Tiara, requires a forged relic to purchase a royal title, and Nate says it usually only works in a country that doesn't have a monarchy, and so Hardison's like problem solver. So he's like, oh yeah, forgery. You need a forgery. I know some guys. And in the States. And Sophie's like, oh no, Hardison, you're going to create it. And he's like,
Hardison's probably thinking, we can get like a 3D printer, it'll be fine.
We're gonna get some Ocean's 8 stuff in here. No, he's going to create not a forgery, but a work of art. And it's going to overwhelm Keller's senses because we have this great little round robin where they send the little statue of Ra around and kind of investigate it using different senses besides sight. So Sophie makes Hardison smell it again. And she's like, that's how he knew that Nate was lying. And it smells of cinnamon and cardamom.
Libyan tombs are packed with these certain spices. So that's why he knew Nate was full of it when he said this was from an Egyptian tomb, because those are Libyan tomb spices. And then, like you said, and then Elliot had a feel, and he's like, yes, because 18th century museums are doing whatever. And then Parker gets up close and personal.
Parker licks it. Which is great. She's like, can I taste it? And it's cold. Which is great. So they have to create something that has so many real aspects to it that Keller will know that it's authentic immediately and won't look really closely at it beyond right. those things. Right. Because he's too much of an expert otherwise to be fooled.
Cool.
So she gives Hardison a supply list and tells him not to skimp on the supplies. And Parker and Elliot get to help him source these things.
And like we talked like we talked about, like Nate, like Sophie says, like, this guy is in his head. So we gotta overwhelm him, like think three steps ahead, like overwhelm like everything. So he has no choice but to think this is real. Like this, oh, there's still this evidence. Like, it looks right, it smells right, it feels right, it tastes right. So it's gotta be right. It's gotta be right.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, please don't taste it. Ew. So, yeah. And meanwhile, Nate and Sophie are going to go get Keller to agree to move their stash of treasures. Mm-hmm. Which, like, what treasures? And wait, does this say goat marrow?
Oh, poor.
So, Nate and Sophie...
this is the beginning of Hardison going, spiraling down and going to the bad place.
I love it. So Nate and Sophie go meet Keller for tea. And as they're going through this revolving door, I love this. He says, I'm about to revisit the topic of Sophie being overinvested. And, you know, they talk about how he's leery of using a heart con to fool a man who funds terrorists for a living. And Sophie says, you know, you're always all about the head, but I'm about the, you know, but it always comes down to the heart. And she says, for a guy who's always in his head, the heart con is the only one that works. But then he's like, yeah, but if it goes wrong, it's like igniting jet fuel.
It goes wrong very, 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 it can go wrong very quickly and very badly.
Yeah. And she says, tell that to the little girl in holding. I'm like, okay.
Yes. Sophie's like existential crisis. And it really struck home for me because on a deep level, like, that makes sense. For a guy who's always in his head, like, you can't play that game with him because you're not going to win, so you got to go for the heart. And that just made sense to me. And I think we talked about it earlier, like, Sophie's just reading him like any good, like, psychiatrist or, like, therapist, like, a comment, like, he just read her, like, he read him, like, he saw his weak spots, like, he knew, figured out what she was about, like, grifters are amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, while watching this one, and we're talking about Sophie having an existential crisis about the unintended consequences of what she's done in the past and who they might have hurt. And this specifically is, like, a little kid who's hurt, and that's what she's, you know, she's focused on, like, I'm going to try to help this one person who's being made a victim of this world that I'm a part of. But they never make it, like, a motherly thing. And I thought about that. In our first recording, we also talked about how great it is that Sophie's not, like, a really young woman, that she's a woman in her 40s, but I don't know, we've, like, never touched on the fact that she's a woman in her 40s who's not in a long-term relationship with a man. Like, she's not married, she doesn't want to get married, as far as we know.
There's, like, no biological clock.
There's no biological clock. Like, she doesn't want kids. There's never a scene where she's like, oh, the window of having children has passed me by, which it hasn't, because we know Gina Bellman is still having children while she's filming the series. But
or, like, there's never a thing where she, like cuddles a baby and just, like, goes gaga over the baby, or, like, I can't, like, all my girlfriends are just getting married and having kids, like, you know, like.
Yeah, no one pressures her about having children. And the same for Parker. Even in the fairy godparent job, she, you know, she's bonding with that young boy, but it's almost not peer-to-peer, but it's like a mentor thing. It's not like, oh, I want to be your mom, I want to take care of you. It's just, like, I want to help you.
That's, like, let's face it, that's our stage of life right now. See, all of our friends, all our family, but that is our Facebook feeds are just full of, like, all of our high school and college or whatever friend, like, posting pictures of their babies. Like, that is the stage we're at. But that's not to say, like, that automatically means our biological clocks are ticking, and like we're thinking about like our eggs and for whatever it is, like it's whatever we want to do. If we want to have kids, we can still have kids. If we don't want to have kids, that's fine too. So it's not all, we don't all want to have kids. Like, I think, yeah.
And I think it's amazing that leverage does this.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to point that out.
Yes.
All right, back to high C. Let's see, where are we? Yeah, like you were saying earlier, she just reads him. She like has these little head tilts and she's just watching him. As she starts to kind of like weave her web, he like physically leans in to hear her story. one thing before we talk about the whole con that she's trying to sell him a bill of goods about is she, it's been pointed out in like the trivia or in the Wikipedia or the wiki article for this, she pours her tea incorrectly, and it's a real giveaway of the fact that she's not actually nobility. And I don't know if that's supposed to be, maybe we're supposed to read that as, I can't read it as Sophie is not a perfect grifter and doesn't know these things. I'm going to read it as Gina Bellman didn't realize this, or they didn't direct her to do this. She technically she should take her gloves off when she sits down to have high tea. And she also holds, I believe, the bowl of cream or the pitcher of cream. She holds it incorrectly to pour her tea, or to pour the cream into her tea. But I mean, I wouldn't know that, but I think someone like Keller would know that.
A royal fetishist because, as we've would said, pick up on those details. Details. A royal fetishist would pick up on
those details. Yeah. But anyways, maybe in levered verse, that's not how the nobility drink or pack the tea. So this is the con that she's selling him on. In order to prove that he should fill one of these vacant baronies, she says, what if you were to bring forth a private journal of a noble ancestor, then even the queen wouldn't be able to refuse you. And she says that she found a private diary that once belonged to the mistress of King George III.
I mean, would a diary be enough for the Earl Marshal? I mean, would, like we talked about before, wouldn't it have to be more of a paper trail, not just a diary?
I think she's kind of implying, like, if you have this diary, then you can make the paper trail pretty easily, but this would be, like, the nail in the coffin.
You can base your paper trail off of this diary. Like, if...
you would have to, because...
The diary will mention, like, you know, Mom Abigail, or Sister Sarah, or something, so that would give you more clues for the paper trail, I guess. Yeah. Okay.
So it's supposed to be the diary of the mistress of King George III, and he's like, oh, that's like a myth. And then she doesn't say anything, and he's like, isn't it? And you know, she tells this whole tale of, like, you know, he's got this
mistress,
you know, his rule was like marked with tragedy. He like lost the
colony.
You know, his descent into madness, all this stuff. But during like one lucid moment, he protected his mistress Catherine and sent her and a bunch of treasure off to America, which is another reason that I'm glad that we redid this part, because I did some research to see if he actually had. Well, because I was like, how does she spell Catherine? But for some reason, in my notes, I needed to spell the name correctly. Because one of my sisters is named Catherine. I'm like, is it with a K? Is there a Y involved? I don't know. This seems to be another myth. From what I read, King George III was among the minority amongst royalty in that he was never known to have any mistresses at all. In fact, one of his nicknames was Farmer George, because he was so boringly monogamous. He and his wife had 15 children altogether.
That poor woman. Survive.
I know, they didn't all survive to adulthood. Also, she was biracial. which I think is very interesting. Fell down a little rabbit hole really quick. And I think it was several generations back. But yeah, there, if you look at portraits of her, her nose, I was like, oh, that's interesting. She looks very not white. and then you, I didn't look, do a lot of research on her. But, and okay. From what I was reading, he also may have suffered from bipolar disorder, because a lot of his papers were just released. Queen Elizabeth II just released them to the public, so they've been digitized. Uh-huh. And some things have kind of led people to believe that maybe one of the illnesses that he was suffering from was bipolar disorder. And the other one was porphyria, because that ran in his family.
What is porphyria?
But yeah. Porphyria, thank you for asking. I have it pulled up. It is. All I could think of was like the poem Porphyria's Lover, but which is about a woman who gets strangled to death by her own hair, by her lover with her own hair. Yeah. So Porphyria. Sweet, right? Porphyria. Also, I learned that in my one of my British literature classes at 8 a.m. my freshman year of college. Porphyria refers to a group of disorders that result from a buildup of natural chemicals that produce porphyrin in your body. Porphyrins are essential for the function of hemoglobin, a protein in your red blood cells that links to porphyrin, binds iron, and carries oxygen to your organs and tissues. High levels of porphyrin can cause significant problems. Some of the symptoms are severe abdominal pain, pain in your chest, legs, or back, nausea and vomiting, constipation or diarrhea, muscle pain, tingling, numbness, weakness, or paralysis, red or brown urine, mental changes. Oh, and this is what they were, the symptoms that he really showed.
Oh,
anxiety,
confusion,
hallucinations. Anxiety is gross. Yes, I agree. Anxiety, confusion, hallucinations, disorientation, or paranoia.
Urine. That's gross.
It's just urine, Lisa. It's okay. We all do it. And seizures, among other things.
Okay,
So that's a myth, but in the Leverage universe, he had a mistress and she kept a diary. And Sophie says, the man who has her book can claim a direct line to the throne, which is definitely worthy of a barony and a fortune.
A fortune. And Keller is just like eating this up, hook, line, and sinker. Like he is into it.
This is the answer to all of his wildest dreams. Then we have Elliot bringing Hardison some of the supplies from his list, including soot that's all over London, which he tries to wipe off with a cloth that's on the table.
And has something. He wore it with a vegan chick, so he's feeling particularly peppy today.
Well, until he wiped his hands on a suspiciously damp cloth. And, he slams out of the room saying, damn it, Hardison. And Hardison's like, why are you so sensitive? You touched worse.
Look, Hardison is on his, he's going to the bad place. This is not good. He's going to the bad place now. He's going to the bad place.
Yeah, because the cloth was to help him make paper, and he says, you don't want to know what they do to keep it soft or to keep it damp. But I love, it took me a couple watches, but when he is slamming out of the room, Elliot says, I'm going out for Baba Ganoush, which I took to mean he's meeting up with the vegan woman that he met earlier.
Yeah, when I think
walnut oil.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He better wash his hands first. That was all I have to say.
Oh, God.
And then we're back at tea with Sophie and Keller, and she tells him that the diary.
And can we just discuss that, she is still wearing, very structured, very duchessy clothes.
I hate this outfit.
and still some very aggressive pearls.
It's literally all pearls and, white gloves and a headband that's, 20 years too young for her, and I just don't like it.
And a black dress.
The black dress is fine. The black dress is unobjectionable because we see it later when she stands up. But yeah, I know it's horrible.
So
she tells him that the diary is going up for auction at Claridge's along with some other 18th century volumes. And the auctioneer doesn't even know what is all in this. and that she was just going to pick it up as a family heirloom, but she's willing to share if he helps her out by moving her goods to America.
Right.
Because, you know, she says, my operation is really small and it works on relationships, but I don't have the infrastructure to move so much so quickly.
Right.
And she's like, all right, so are we good? Is this going to work? And he's like, well, almost.
Do we have a deal?
Do we have a deal? Well, not quite, because there's someone who wants to see you first. And, you know, Nate's like, what? What's happening? What? Who's here?
It's like his spidey senses are going off now. Red alert.
Yeah. And Keller announces the Countess of Kensington. And this older woman shows up. And we, you know, you all assume the jig is up. Oh, you know,
looking
crap.
Like...
Yeah, and Nate's like
jacket and a very aggressive hat, like a church lady hat. Very strong hat game.
Very large hat. And you know, Nate's like, all right, if you need to get out, just run. Doesn't matter.
We'll figure something out. Like if you're blown, if it's hot, get out of there.
Yeah. But they know each other, at least well enough for Sophie to call her auntie.
Right. And I think Gina Bellman's playing this moment really perfectly here, because we think that she's just nervous because the jig is up. Like, mm-hmm. She's about to be exposed. She's going to think the Countess, like, who the hell is this Heffa? But
the Countess never say Heffa.
Whatever the posh British equivalent of Heffa is, okay? But my point being, instead, she is nervous, but for another different reason. It's not, but we think it's because she's about to be blown, but it's for a different reason.
Very true.
Yeah.
And then we flip back to the hotel room, and Parker and Elliot are arriving back in the room, and they're talking, like, we get to hear, like, the tail end of their conversation, and they're talking about cotton swabs. They're, like, talking about Q-tips. And it's just this random thing they've been talking about, and I love... Leverage is really good about that, where you just hear like the end of a conversation or an argument, and it really kind of builds the background of these characters. Like, oh, obviously they have a history together. They're not standing outside of the room silently and then
and
walking.
I think they mentioned in the commentaries sometimes they just let the camera roll, let the cast like just riff and do what they do. Like they don't over script it. They just let the natural chemistry and let the bond between the characters and the actors, just let it flow and let it do what it do.
Mm-hmm. they chose well when they cast everybody in the show, because they can do that and it works.
Yeah.
And they walk in and Hardison, like you said, he's going to the bad place. He's losing it. And it's beautiful. I freaking love this. He says, they walk in and Parker's like, I don't know when we have to make this switch, but are you printing out every page of this diary? And it's going to take a while unless, as Elliot says, she had a short and boring life. And Hardison's like, hey, you don't know what I've done. I have made ink from boysenberries. I've tanned leather for the binding. And
I have dealt with animal parts I do not care to discuss.
To make glue. I got the content for the pages from an algorithm made up from diaries and novels of the time period. And he's like, in a single day, I've gone from apprentice to journeyman to master. And they're like, okay, we're gonna go. And like,
they know Hardison has gone to the bad place, and they are just stepping back away from the cray cray.
Parker's like, I'm gonna go steal something. And he's like, okay, we'll come back because I've used computer technology with this stuff. I've hacked history. It's so good. And it reminded me, since we tried our first recording, we were watching the series on Bon Appetit's YouTube page.
Okay.
Where it's in their kitchen, and one of the chefs, she tries to recreate popular foods gourmet style. So we watched her attempt to make gourmet M&Ms. Yeah, so she's done Pocky, Doritos, a whole bunch of things. And so we watched the one where she's trying to make M&Ms, and just like the weird things she had to do to make it work, it very much was Hardison trying to make this diary. So Sophie and the Countess are regaling Keller with reminiscences until he gets a call and we hear him say, you know, say Moreau's name. So we know he's on the phone with him. And while he's gone, we get to find out a little more about how Sophie and the Countess knew each other. And we talked last time about what our kind of theories are. So we find out there's a poor William who was heartbroken when she left 8 years ago, though the Countess says the drink consoled him. So we know that he was an alcoholic.
I read it as William was the Countess's husband, so the Earl, and Sophie was like a surrogate daughter or something like that. And then she ran away and did her life of crime and just kind of like lost touch, and it broke William's heart. And why the Countess is a bit like, you know, not that nice. Like, she tells, like, oh, stop it. Like, you'll sour your looks. And, like, she's not being very nice.
Yeah. Well, part of me thinks that's, like, just the stiff upper British lip, right?
This is true.
I think you're also, I think you have a point. When I was rewatching it, my new theory is that Sophie is actually part of the peerage and that she married into this title very young to this George man who was like the nephew of the Countess. And that's why, and they knew each other when they were young. So that's why she calls her auntie. And then she decided she was, you know, unhappy, she was restless, she wanted to go see the world, like she said, and she took off, and she probably started her life of crime at home, you know, picking up things here and there, different people's, you know, fancy bloody houses, and then, like, decided she wanted to go large scale, and then left, and just kind of abandoned him, and he drank him to death, which I think is an interesting parallel to her and Nate's relationship with, like, the alcoholism. So yeah, but that's my new theory of Sophie.
I mean, it would track that somehow she can't help but be attracted to broken men. It tracks.
Or Nate's, I keep wanting to call him Nathan when we record. Or Nate's, like, her chance to redeem herself from not being there for George. I don't know, something like that.
Interesting.
We could psychoanalyze that some more later.
But like you said last time, we're really not meant to know. What the real story is. We're not
Which is fun, because then you can kind of anybody can come up with their own theories.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Nate is just sitting on the other side of the room, just taking all of this in, like, what's real, what's not, what's a con, what's authentic?
Basically, like, he is, like, WTF right now.
And he's trying not to, like, look smug, like, oh, I know this stuff that you probably don't want me to know because you look very vulnerable right now. and he, like, kind of looks over and, like, looks away. And Keller gets off the phone and he says, oh, that was my boss. And he is uneasy about or nervous about an incident that happened in Boston. And I want to know what happened, but I can't remember if we find out later. And this, whatever this incident is, made him nervous. So he, instead of doing the shipment later, he wants to do the shipment tomorrow.
Right.
And kind of calling Sophie's bluff.
At this point, like, we're meant to believe that he has set up this meeting with the Countess as a test. Sophie passed. So we're meant to believe that he is now all in.
Yeah, he's on board. And so then we go back to Claridge's. And for a minute I was like, wait, is it the next day? Sophie and Nate are wearing the same outfits. But I think they just went back there later in the afternoon for this auction. And then the next day, they'll actually be doing the shipment.
Right.
And Nate asks her, how real is this Duchess persona? And she immediately, like, deflects. She's like, oh, so where are we in our plan right now? Recap for me.
Like, how is Hardison coming along with his art project?
Yeah, what else do we have to do? You know, and so we know that Hardison's still hard at work and Elliot's going to distract the guards.
And so, like, Nate's like, so we got to come up with something that's going to fool him. We still got to contend with Moreau. We still got to make sure this con goes through. We still have to make sure Keller doesn't get tipped off. A, B, C, D, E, and F. And then Sophie's like, piece of cake. We got this.
And she's like, and I've distracted you from your question. Goodbye. I'm going to go sit on the other side of the room. So Hardison is still drying the manuscript, and he has managed to procure a manicure dryer. A yes. hair dryer would be too hot, and it would curl the pages, and it would take too long to let it air dry.
So it's like, I guess the manicure, what that fan is more like a lower, cooler air. It's cool air, not hot air. So that would probably dry it more properly, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you've had your fingers in a manicure dryer. Nothing like sticking your head under a hair dryer.
Exactly.
And Hardison says, as stunning as his work is, it won't.
Stunning, he says. Stunning, I say.
Stunning. I mean, know your worth. He says it won't hold up to lasting scrutiny, so we got to trick him real fast.
Like, and he's come back. He's pulled back from the bad place a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's coming back from the bad place.
The bad place is not a place that you stay during the creative process. It is like the turmoil, the chaos in the middle, the nucleus. And then you, come out the other end and you have the product, and it's like giving birth. You don't remember how bad it was until you do it again.
I just basically feel like the bad place is something every author recognizes. It's when you're in deadline hell. That's when you're in the bad place.
That's when you
make bad decisions and you do things you shouldn't do. And you order, delivery for 3 weeks because you can't be bothered to cook and you don't get out of your pajamas and you don't wash your hair. Yes, we all know what the bad place is like.
Exactly. Exactly. Elliot has to go stall the henchman, and
have we discussed the hat yet? His hat situation?
Yes. I think, yeah, okay. We did.
Okay.
And he wants to, because he's not wearing the hat here. He's hatless. And there's nothing wrong with his head, so I don't know why he was wearing the hat so much. God. Okay, and his hair looks fine. But he wants to stall the henchmen, but they want to go straight to the storage locker. So Nate's like, "Oh, give them a tour of London." And he's like, "I'm supposed to just stall former British paratroopers." Very distinctive haircuts.
Christian kind of just lets his natural, Midwestern Oklahoma twang come in, and he just plays the laid back old. Good old boy, and he pulls it back a little bit.
Yeah, just kind of dumb, bumbling country guy. And Keller shows up at Claridge's, and he's like, "Oh, I've checked on the books." And Sophie's like, "You did what?" But he just meant that he asked around about them. And then they laugh together about how the auctioneers have no idea what they're worth.
They just think it's some ramblings of fantasies of some random clueless young schoolgirl. They have no idea.
And they're like, "Ha ha ha," but Sophie's also like, "Phew, oh my gosh, that was close."
Yeah.
Nate goes looking for Parker, and she just pops up out of nowhere, which they said in the commentary, they like to have her do. Never want you to just see Parker walk up. She needs to fall down from an air shaft or just pop up out of nowhere.
I remember in the second David job when all four of them were inadvertently was casing the museum, and then she just jumps down and lands right behind Sophie, and she gave Sophie a heart attack.
Yeah. And he asks her if she did what she was supposed to do, if she took care of the auctioneer. And he said, "Yeah, Sophie told me to find out his deepest wish and give it to him, but I thought that would take too much time." So she just says, "Hey, does this smell like chloroform?" And chloroforms him so that she can take
him. This is how Parker problem solves.
Yeah, we know that Parker likes to take notes on people, and then she can figure out what their heart's desire is, but she didn't have time to take notes on this man. So chloroform it is. And he'll be fine, like he said. He'll wake up in 3 hours. So she becomes the auctioneer, and she just it's like show and tell almost. She's like, "This was stolen from an emperor in a donkey's saddlebag, and then stolen because there was bad security grid." And this box will get you chased by 16 armed guards in Versailles.
And this is a fake, so she just tosses it over her shoulder.
So great. And then Hardison finally shows up with the book and the box, because Nate says they both need to pass muster.
Right.
And he tells Nate that when Keller bids, it's got to be a big number. that he bids or that he pays for it so that Hardison can track it through all the shell companies that he uses. Mm-hmm. It has to be at least $250,000.
That's the magic number.
And so Parker's ready to start the bidding, and Hardison like stumbles up because he has a cramp from running. I refuse to believe that man cannot run. We saw him with his shirt off earlier, and he's fit. But maybe he only lifts and doesn't do cardio. So, but he walks up with a phone bid of $150,000 to get everything started, and Sophie puts her neuro-linguistic programming to good use to get Keller to bid immediately.
Like we said last time, she wasn't even being particularly subtle. She's tapping him with her. She's like grabbing his arm, like squeezing his arm. Like they're not playing around. Like there's no time to play around. Let's just get this done.
Yeah, she slides her hand up his thigh. It is getting intimate. And to kind of like counter it and get the bids driven up, Nate gets a dude to think he could get a date with Parker if he bids for these books.
Yeah, well, and Sophie's just like, don't you think this is too much? 200,000.
Yeah. Exactly. And then she calls the boy in the pink shirt the toe rag. That's our family's history. So she's able to get Keller all the way up to $300,000, which will do it.
Yes.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Elliot finally gets the former British paratroopers to the storage locker.
After expressing surprise that a red light means the same thing in England that it means in the United States, they both mean stop.
Yeah. And oh, hey, it's not my fault. I'm on the wrong side of the road. So then he's pretending to look for his key. And then we get a quick cut back to Keller inspecting the diary, and he smells it, and he's like, yep, that's real, which makes Hardison whoop in the other room. I think that's one of my favorite things about the comms that they use. Like, they could talk wherever they are. They look weird because they're talking to themselves, but also, like, when one of them gets information that's good, when they just out of nowhere make a loud noise or...
But it's Hardison that's to be the one who will take a victory lap like that. Nate is just too self-loathing to actually do like a whoop a victory lap. Like Sophie is too refined and she would never.
And she's too into the con.
Yeah. I mean, like she would gloat, but she wouldn't be like that effusive, like over the top with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like. Hardison is the only one who will be whooping and hollering and literally taking a victory lap. The other members of the crew wouldn't, I feel like.
So maybe what I mean is that I love Hardison. Does that work? I think that's
you
true.
And
I think
love that's Hardison? True. Really?
I know. I think I should confess my feelings. We're 3 seasons in. I can be honest. We're all friends
here.
Live
your truth, Steve. Live your truth, Steve.
I will. So Keller accepts that it's real. He transfers the money. And then he says he doesn't need Sophie to meet with the Earl Marshal with him. In fact, the Countess told him about her royal scandal. So he's better off without her anyways. And you know what? He's going to take her stuff too and let his henchmen kill Elliot. Which, come on, that's not going to work out for them. And he uses a belt to take all of them out because Jackie Chan.
You were very focused on the belt last time.
The belt is amazing. He takes the belt off one of the guys and beats up the rest of them with it. He beats up 3 men with the belt.
This is true. I mean, I was just impressed that they just ended up like literally like trussed up like pig.
I know. And it's literally like the first thing that Elliot's gotten to do. Like he went and like picked up soot and like hit on a vegan woman and he like held hands with a little girl. Like that's all he's done.
No. He also has some baba ganoush.
Well, that was like off camera. We didn't get to see him actually do things. He's like pretending to fix a car in a garage.
Yeah. While securing the perimeter, yes.
Yeah. So Keller gets to the airport and I guess it's the British airport still, but he's on the phone with Moreau and he tells him he's going to be there in the usual room in 2 hours.
Yeah, and so I'm assuming at this point he's been pulled over by the UK's version of TSA for like the screening, and like at this point, like, he's not even bothered. He's just, like, really impatient. Like, can we just move along? Like, can we just get this over with? I have nothing. Like, I have a flight. Please, let's just, you know.
Well, he didn't say please, but yes. Well, no. He's like, come on.
I'm a very busy man, people. He's, like, this close to, like, do you know who I am?
Exactly. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to be detained. And he's like, no, look, I just bought this diary. Here's the paperwork. And he's like, yeah, you bought the diary, but you didn't buy these wooden Russian icons. And he
I didn't steal any Russian icons.
Yeah, and it's honest, like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, the box is made of Russian icons because in the flashback that we see when Nate tells Parker to take the statue of Ra, he also tells her to take the Russian icons that she finds.
Yes.
Or the crate.
Yes.
And then he goes, and I hate to tell you this, but you paid $300,000 for a fake. And his hands have the glue all over them from the diary.
Oh. And this would have been like a perfect moment to like pan back and have the team gloat. But the logistics were such that this was not an opportunity for a gloat.
But the gloat is that the authorities are also going to want to talk to him about the other antiquities that he's trying to smuggle that day, because the storage unit that Elliot took the henchmen to is full of stolen items,
and you said that this was not Scotland Yard. This was just the regular, like, Metropolitan Police.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like hoity-toity Scotland Yard.
Right. It's not Lestrade, you know.
So
they look like beat cops. They have like the hats on and stuff.
Yeah, and I just love that, like, that cop who was like, if you say, you know, if this is nothing, I'd sure like to see what you mean.
Like to see something.
Yeah, exactly.
Says, what is, when they get there, he says, oh, what's all this then, which is a Monty Python reference. Which I love. You know, we find out all of that stuff is from the beginning of Sophie's career, and
going back to the discussion earlier in the episode about the archaeology of crime. This locker is basically Sophie Devereaux's origin story.
Exactly, and we don't get to see it. but Ayan, the little girl, I believe that's her name, is released from custody. And Elliot gives her a high five, and it's so cute. And I love that she recognizes him out of the captain's uniform when she, like, literally spoke to him for, like, 5 seconds. But,
and, like, she's unfazed. Like, that's just my buddy. He helped me.
I know. So good. And Nate tells Sophie, well, at least I know your real name now. And she's like, nope. That was just my stage name. You don't know.
Like, which, like, throws everything, like, into contention. Like, who exactly the Countess is. Like, what exactly the connection is and what the real story is. And like you said, we're not meant to know. So, you know.
Yeah. A mystery always. Yeah. Meanwhile, Hardison says while they were on the flight back from England, he was able to peel back some layers of their security while he was doing his trace of Keller's bank transfer. All while on airplane Wi-Fi, and
okay.
he found 10 shell companies, one of which is a good lead. It's an investment company owned by a former hockey enforcer that Elliot recognizes the name of, but he's untouchable because he's
Mark
a government.
Vector.
Yes, Mark Vector, but he's untouchable because he's a government informer, so he's off limits. But Nate's like smirking already. We never get more than one, I think, let's go steal, because he says let's go steal a federal witness.
I mean, it's not a spoiler to say this whole scene was basically to set up the next episode.
Yeah, which is rare. They like never set up the next episode unless it's like a two-parter.
Yeah, so this is very because usually it's very, each episode is very much a standalone. So,
Yeah. And that's the end of the episode. I wanted to, before we go into high slides, I wanted to go back. At the very beginning, we talked about this episode was the first episode of Leverage that was directed by a woman. And then we didn't talk about her at all. So her name is Millicent B. Shelton, and she's an American music video, television, and film director.
Ooh.
So yeah, she began her career as a wardrobe production assistant on the Spike Lee film Do the Right Thing, which I think is really neat. And then she went on to direct music videos for Mary J. Blige, Aaliyah, and Salt-N-Pepa. And she has directed tons of things. Everybody Hates Chris, Castle, Girlfriends, My Name is Earl, Leverage, and 30 Rock, for which she became the first African-American woman to earn a Primetime Emmy Award nomination for Outstanding Director of a Outstanding Directing of a Comedy Series for the episode Apollo, Apollo. She is an alumna of Princeton University and NYU's Tisch School of Arts.
And really she's from impressive.
Yeah,
really impressive.
She's very impressive. And if you go to her IMDb, holy cow, she's directed so many amazing shows. Lately, she's done a lot of the DC shows, so she's done Flash and stuff. She's done 6 episodes of Blackish, The Walking Dead.
Did she do Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? If you're saying she does a lot of the...
She did an episode of Runaways, which I love. It's my favorite Marvel world. Empire, let's see, she did Rosewood, which I loved. The Flash, she did Jessica Jones.
I wonder if she did Living Single back in the day.
I can go back and look. Oh, she did an episode of My Boys. I love that show. And I was just thinking about the other day, when was Living Single out?
In the 90s.
So much. No, her initial stuff, like all the 90s are videos.
Ah, okay. Music videos, okay.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, no, she's amazing. I love her. And I wish she had come back to direct more episodes of Leverage. And I was also noticing, kind of once I knew, I had read a little more about her and then I was rewatching the episode again. If you look in the background, the extras and stuff are very diverse. Like normally if you like really closely look at extras in the background of a scene, it's going to be all white people. But there were a lot of people of color in the backgrounds of these scenes. And I have to think that it's had something to do with having a woman of color as the director.
So, like you said, like it is probably a credit to having a person of color in charge that it looks accurate that way. And it's not all white people.
Exactly.
Props to her.
Yes. Millicent Shelton. Lots of stuff. Support her.
Yes.
Let's do high slides really quick.
All right. My high slide was about this. I really tied into the episode. It talked about this dealer and this forger and how they created this series of forgeries that ended up in very prominent like museums around the world, including the Met in New York City. And I'm going to butcher the name. I'm apologizing it in advance.
Parmigianino. Parmigianino? Yeah.
And it started with like someone noticing that something was wrong with those photos and with those paintings. And the article mentioned that, you know, they are on the hook for like 200 something million because they have to pay back Sotheby's or the auction house or whatever it is who bought it because they had to reimburse the buyers and how they use like scientific like techniques probably like to prove that it was forgery. So they analyzed the paint samples and found like chemical compounds or something that wouldn't have been in it or techniques or something in there. So it just kind of made like we were talking about how Keller used clues to establish, to realize that Nate was like selling him a fake. And all the things that Sophie made Harrison do to convince Keller that the thing was real. And it was really fascinating.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And they owe a lot of money back.
Yeah. So, you know.
It's staggering. Sure, so check out the link. I'm putting it in the show notes.
Make sure that Monet is actual Monet, people. It might not be an actual Monet.
Oh, my God. Don't buy art. Unless you don't care. Buy local small artists. Mm-hmm. Don't buy them anyway. They're all fakes at this point. Or they were stolen and some poor child had to smuggle it somewhere. Hi, Hi, Slate. I'm not going to go super into it because there's an episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal that you should listen to. And they go into it a little more in depth, but it is about the posh royal expert, Thomas J. Mace Archer Mills, who was like the most interviewed person about the royals during Meghan and Harry's wedding and all of the stuff leading up to that. And it turns out he is actually a man named Tommy Muscatello, and he's a 38-year-old Italian-American who grew up in upstate New York. And yeah, basically Tommy's just always been enamored of British culture and the royals.
He adopted this like affectation online.
Yes. Well, he like went to England as a kid and then like, or as a teenager, and came back speaking with a British accent and like never stopped using this British accent. And now he lives in England and he made up his own royal society of people who are like also obsessed with the royals. And yeah, it is, he's written several books. But, I mean, he's not really doing anything wrong. And, you know, when it came out, he was like, I never explicitly said it was English. I just speak with an English accent. Which, to be fair,
Madonna also has. He was just a very intense, like, fanboy and enthusiast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty harmless. But Lie, Cheat, and Steal, that podcast did a pretty cool episode on him. So you should go. You can read the article from The Guardian that I'm going to post, but you should also listen to their podcast and hear it. And then what I really wanted to talk about was this new Korean drama that's coming out October 13th in Korea.
I'm so excited, Steve. I'm so excited.
Yes. So they are releasing an adaptation of Leverage, but Korean style. It's going to be called Leverage Con Artists. And it's gonna star Lee Dong Gun, Jian Hai Bin, Kim Seiron, Kim Kwan, and Yeo Ho Hyun. And if I said any of those names wrong, I really apologize. It's gonna premiere October 13th on TV Chosun. But yeah, it's just like our Leverage follows the story of a former insurance investigator who forms a team of thieves and real bad guys. And there are, I think, some slight differences. So Kim Seiron is playing Go Nabyul, who's a former fencing national athlete turned into a top class thief who uses her quick and flexible movements to help swindle people and sneak into places. The Elliot character is played by Kim Kwan as Roy Ryu. And he's a security specialist who became a mercenary specializing in various forms of martial arts. And I believe he was adopted by an American couple, which is why he has a more Western name, Roy. And then the first article that I found didn't have a Hardison character, but he has been cast.
Sent me the link. We were very concerned. Like, you can't have a crew without a hacker.
You have it. His Hardison's name is Jiang Yu-sung, and he's a timid man who has great digital skills, especially in computers, mobile phones, and CCTV. So I'm very intrigued by the idea of the Hardison character being a timid man.
Because that is the last thing Hardison or Alvis is timid.
Right? Yes. Then the Nate character is played by Lee Dong-gun as Lee Tae-joon. And it says he's a former principled elite insurance investigator who was once viewed as the Grim Reaper of con artists, which is amazing. And Jeon Hae-bin as Hwang Soo-kyung, a top scammer who's able to speak four languages fluently, which I love. Like, she's, you know, multilingual.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of talked about the different, I think we kind of said, oh, I bet everybody's really young. And, you know, the kids, as we refer to them, they are younger, but Lee Dong-gun, he's older. He's like 39, older. And Jeon Hae-bin, she's a little older too. She's in her 30s. She's 35. She was in a short-lived girl group called Love. they disbanded after a year, and she had a solo album. Anyways, I could fall down this Wikipedia hole for days. But yeah, Korean Leverage show, and as soon as we find a legal way to watch it, I'm sure that we will do episodes about it.
Please. Because
he lives on. It's amazing. And I hope people come and listen to this so that they know what the show is.
I wonder if John, Dean, and Chris know about it.
Oh, no, they definitely know. I've seen them tweet about it.
Awesome.
I've seen Dean tweet about it, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, they have to, because I'm sure that they had to sign off on it and get paid for it.
Some licensing or copyright deal or something, yeah.
Yeah. Tell people where they can find you on Twitter.
I am at LaFaresta1 on Twitter. I handed in my thing, so I'm officially off deadline.
Yay!
But does that mean that I did not come for Judi Dench, I did not come for Elton John, so do not attack me on Twitter. That is not what I did. Okay? I did not come for it. And you don't need to send me any more cats and boxes gifts. I'm good.
Those are the words of someone who, one, did come for Judi Dench and Elton John, and does need more gifts of cats and boxes.
Oh, yeah.
And as usual, I'm on Twitter at LibrarianSteed. So you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks when we talk about The Morning After Job. And I believe Corey will be with me to talk about that one.
And I will be back for the finale. So you won't hear from me for a few weeks, but I shall be back.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
That'll be fun.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.